Dateline, the 5th of September. Time, 2100 hours. Latitude, 45.52 degrees north. Longitude, 122.68 degrees west. Shh. We're high-tech squatching. We're on the hunt. No, we're not hunting for the mysterious Yeti, the Loch Ness Monster, or heck, even the ever-elusive EUV. No. We're looking for some HLS. Quiet. Don't wake the marketing folks. They won't like us going off by ourselves like this. Hi, I'm Amelia Dalton. This is Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by eejournal.com and sponsored by Avnet. Truth be told, HLS has been around in PowerPoint myth for quite some time. But what about reality? Is HLS always going to be the technology of the future? Are we ever going to find proof? A footprint? A grainy video of it running through the woods, at least? Today, in part one of my fish frying series called On the Hunt, HLS, my guest is Mark Milligan from Calypto. Mark joins Fish Fry for the very first time to bring HLS into the light, into the world, and into the caring hands of Google? Oh yes, check it out. My guest today is Mark Milligan, Vice President of Marketing at Calypto. Thank you so much for joining me today, Mark.
Hi, Amelia. I'm so glad to be here.
Excellent. So, for my audience who may not know, maybe they're living under a rock or something, what does Calypto do?
Well, we do two primary flows. One of the flows is high-level synthesis from System C or C++, synthesizing that down to RTL. We also do a low-power flow that has RTL in. We do a deep sequential analysis of the design and look for low-power opportunities such as clock gating or putting memories to sleep. And we do that based on analysis of the design. And then we have a formal verification product called SLEC that we use in those two flows. In the first case, to verify the System C and compare that to the synthesized RTL. And then in the other flow, it's taking a look at the RTL input to the low-power synthesis and verifying that against the low-power output RTL.
So you recently have had quite a coup. Google is using your web video acceleration IP. Do tell me about this.
So they're actually using our Canapult high-level synthesis tool to develop their IP, which is web video acceleration. So the background of that is, of course, they're big in web video. They're driving a better user experience across the web. They've developed a software codecs to help do that. It's called their WebM project. And then they've developed some associated hardware IP for accelerating the video and improving the experience further. And so what they've done is they've developed that using C++ in our Catapult synthesis. They were here at DAC presenting the use model and why they selected that and also what the project is all about. Another interesting thing about the project is, and one of the reasons why they selected this high-level synthesis flow, is to take these C input that goes into the synthesis tool. They want to provide this IP to their semiconductor partners. And their vision is that using C instead of RTL, their partners are able to modify it, improve it, and then contribute those improvements back into the source design. And that doing that in the RTL would just be prohibitively difficult and keep up with changes and that sort of thing. So in addition to the productivity gains that you get by moving to high-level synthesis, which are substantial, they also had the belief that it's a better way of collaborating. The session was absolutely packed, as you can imagine. There were people coming up to the gentleman afterwards asking questions. And I think one of the things that was interesting for people was, even if they're not collaborating externally like Google is with their semiconductor partners, most companies want to collaborate internally and get their design teams using IP and contributing changes. So there's a lot of interest in the methodology, even for people that were not necessarily doing web video or image processing.
So Mark, let's talk about the adoption of high-level synthesis. Now, it seems like it's catching on. It's no longer the technology that might be. It's actually coming into the world as a real-world tool. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's really changing. And I think there's two primary drivers for that change. One is that there's certain types of IP development that has kind of a high velocity, meaning people have got to change it. And it's very complex algorithmic IP, such as image processing, automotive, doing safety features, facial recognition, cameras going into phones where you're actually improving the picture in real time. So these things have very fast change. The algorithms are extremely complex. So fundamentally, people have a choice of, gosh, they've got to keep up with the changes. Do they put that design in an FPGA, or they keep it in software, or put it on a processor? But those have power and performance challenges. So now they can do custom hardware, but from C. So in a way, it is a programmable alternative compared to the other ones, but you're able to get the power and performance of doing your custom IP. It's not just the algorithmic blocks. It's anything changing standards in communications, wireless comms, other things where there's a lot of DSP functionality or a lot of complex control as well. High-level synthesis has really evolved to be able to handle those kinds of functions as well. So I think that's one of the drivers. The second big driver is RTL verification. It's such a huge expense and problem and challenge for the industry. Well, if you move up to C or System C, you get thousands of times faster and you're able to do more of the verification at that level. Then you combine that with formal verification to compare the RTL to the System C that you verified. You're able to kind of push up where the verification is happening, reduce the RTL verification thing. So that's where one of these changes, that's such a difficult problem for people, and it's a really quite a different way of approaching instead of just spending more and more money on emulators and simulation farms.
So, Mark, coming a little off-the-cuff question, you're a big University of Colorado fan, I hear. Now, what do you think about their move to the Pac-12?
Man, it's been great. It's a good fit for the university, and it's great for me personally because I can go see them a lot more living out here in California, and just go Buffs.
Well, thank you, Mark. It was a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
And now it's time for a little news you may have missed. This week, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy's Fermi National Accelerator Laboratory, or Fermilab, which kind of sounds a bit like some kind of pharmaceutical, doesn't it? Don't take Fermilab if you have the following conditions or have been to an area of the anyway, have you ever considered that maybe, just maybe, everything we see around us is merely a mirage? A hologram? You know, like the Matrix? Well, that's exactly what the U.S. Department of Energy's Fermi National Accelerator Laboratory is aiming to solve. Now, how in the world are they going to solve this existential conundrum? With a bunch of lasers, that's how. The real question here that these scientists at Fermilab are attempting to determine the answer to is the space-time continuum actually a quantum system made up of countless tiny bits of information? All right, get on your high-powered nerd glasses, ladies and gentlemen, and make sure your cat is healthy. We're going in. Now, let's step back a second and think about the pixels on your TV screen, okay? If you stand too close to that darn thing, like your mother told you not to hundreds of times, you'll see that the screen is actually made up of tiny pixels, right? But when we retreat back to that place where Mom said it was appropriate distance away, those pixels all blend together in a hilarious episode of Scooby-Doo or something. But here's the clincher. Scooby-Doo and his mystery-solving pals don't actually know that their world isn't 3D, right? And it only exists in a 2D screen. Let's put aside that they're cartoon characters and don't really exist for just a second, okay? Then based on that idea, well, what if we too are ignorant that our 3D world isn't 3D after all? That our 3D space is just an illusion. Okay. So, based on that idea, the scientists at Fermi National Accelerator Laboratory believe that everything we know, or think we know, about the world around us, heck, the universe itself, may be somehow contained in tiny packets of information in just two dimensions, not three. And these packets of information are about, well, let's see, a trillion times smaller than an atom. Now, how the heck are they going to prove this? Well, let me see if I can explain. The scientists at Fermilab have built what they are calling a holometer, or holographic interferometer to measure the quantum jitter produced by these subatomic particles. The director of Fermilab, Craig Hogan, says that they want to find whether space-time is a quantum system, just like matter is. And if they see something, it will completely change ideas about space that we've used for thousands of years. Okay, right. Those lasers. I almost forgot. This holometer, well, it uses a pair of interferometers, which directs a 1 kilowatt laser beam at a beam splitter, okay? And then down to 240-meter or 130-foot arms, located at right angles to one another. The laser beams are then reflected and returned to the beam splitter, and the two beams are put back together. Okay, so if there's any motion detected, there will be fluctuations in the brightness of the combined beams. Researchers then analyze these fluctuations to see if the beam is being influenced by the jitter of space itself. Okay, so there are problems with this holometer, as you can probably imagine. There is this issue of holographic noise, which is apparently present at all frequencies, and then there are radio waves, which create dominant background noise, often emitted by nearby electronics. But because this holometer is testing at such a high frequency, millions of cycles per second, scientists at Fermilab contend that this experiment is designed to identify and eliminate noise from conventional sources. Physics as we know it, my friends, may have just jumped the shark. Are you ready? If you want to check out even more information about this new Fermilab experiment, which I'm sure you do, I've included a link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com called On the Hunt, Part 1. Go there now, if just for Scooby's sake. Now, let's talk about your engineering universe. Yes, if it actually does exist and isn't some kind of matrix business. When you're knee-deep in the PCB game, you can't think about much else. Am I right? You go to sleep with place and route under your pillow. Your dreams are filled with schematics. You even eat power dissipation with your cornflakes in the morning. But in all of that thinking, sometimes we get lost in our quest for perfection and forget that, yes, we are actually building a product that people will use, not just the world's most awesome PCB. Well, in a recent episode of Chalk Talk called Product-Centric Design with Virtual Prototyping, Bob Potok of Zukin and I explore this very topic. Bob and I chat about the concept of product-centric design and delve into how it differs from traditional PCB-centric design. I know, you're intrigued. Well, you can check out this episode of Chalk Talk by heading on over to YouTube, keyword EE Journal, by clicking the link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com, or by heading on over to the on-demand section of eejournal.com. Hey, did you know that X-Fest is coming up very soon? Well, it is. Avnet and Xilinx are excited to announce the technical program for this year's X-Fest, a global series of seminars offering practical how-to training for FPGA, DSP, SoC, and embedded systems designers. Don't miss this opportunity to learn more about recent innovations in technology and product development methodology from Xilinx, and to experience a deep dive with Avnet technical experts into the key technology domains where Xilinx FPGAs deliver unique, high impact, and cost savings capabilities. Events start in September in North America. All right, that's all there is for this week's Fish Fry. Remember, if you want to register this very instant for this year's X-Fest, you can. I've included a link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page that will take you directly there. Also, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And hey, if Google Plus is your thing, yes, you can also check out our circle on Google Plus. We also have that YouTube channel I mentioned earlier, full of all kinds of techie videos, our very own popular Chalk Talk webcast series, and our video series called On the Scene. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can grab our Fish Fryin' RSS feed or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. Remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or perhaps the best geeky hotspot in your hometown, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com. Or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of September 5th, 2014, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.